Hi, welcome to Believe It or Not. I'm Kate Turkington, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. You're on 702 Talk Radio and Kate Talk. We're with you all the way through from 6 to 9. That's Nick Erickson, my producer, and thanks Nick for standing in so well for me while I was away, and Tabo Makoko, who presses the buttons and is the technical expert here. And here I am back with you on Believe It or Not. Okay, well, joining us now from Los Angeles, I'm really delighted to have on the line Dr. Paul Helfrich. He's Vice President, Technology and Programs for New World View, which I must say is a bit of a mouthful, and we're going to get him to talk us through that. But let's first of all talk about the Ceph material. Good evening, Paul, and welcome.
Okay.
Hi. Now, won't you tell us, I mean, like me, because I only came to this material this week through Nick, my producer, I'm sure there are thousands and thousands of people listening who haven't got a clue. First of all, is it pronounced Ceph or Set?
It's pronounced Ceph.
Okay.
Th.
Okay. So, the Ceph, tell us about, what do we call it, the Ceph movement, the Ceph? Well, what do we call it? What's the collective name?
The Ceph material is probably how it's most often referred to.
Yes.
Now, let me just give a little bit of history about the
Please
author.
Do.
Of the
Ceph. Please do.
There's a woman named Jane Roberts who lived from 1929 until 1984, who was a what we call a channeler. The Ceph material is a channeled body of information. We can talk a little bit more about that later. She began to go into an altered state and speak for another personality that she called Ceph in 1963. So from 1963 until 1984, she would hold weekly sessions in which information was given and was written down by her husband, Rob Butts. Now, they never had any children, so these books and this work became their children and their life's work.
Mm.
In that period of time, the 21 years that she channeled Ceph, she produced over 30 books. Now, 10 of those were dictated by Ceph, and one of the interesting things that the Ceph personality did was he did it on a first take, so to speak. He never edited anything. So in those 10 books, those are her first spoken, that's how they were written.
So no, it's not edited at all.
Right. There is some editing with brackets, and it's
inappropriate
style, of course. The remaining books are fictional works by Jane. She wrote 2 books of poetry. She even wrote a children's book, all of which incorporate these ideas in the Ceph material. Sometimes we refer to them as conscious creation, which embodies the idea that you create your own reality, that reality doesn't create us. And she also wrote several books that are known as aspect psychology books, which were her attempt to come to terms with her own experiences in this phenomenon and the information that was being offered. And just as an example, when she would go into a trance state and speak for this personality called Ceph, her voice would change, her personality would change, and he would speak for however long he would speak, a half an hour or an hour, and when he would leave and she would return, so to speak, she had no memory, or very little memory, of what had been spoken about. So that's an interesting part of the phenomenon of what we loosely call channeling.
Now, who is Ceph? Does he come from a particular time, a particular place?
Before I can answer that question, I want to offer an analogy that I think helps us paint the frame or a foundation to talk about some of these ideas. And that is, we're going to start with an idea of personality, human personality, and a way to understand human personality. The conventional view, according to scientific belief systems, psychology, is that we're a single person, we live a single life, and we die. And if we go over to the religious side of the equation and look at certain religions, there's the idea that perhaps we live more than one time, the idea of reincarnation, that we can manifest over a period of lifetimes, and that's from the Hindu and Buddhist tradition. In the set material, we talk about human personality as being multidimensional. And what that means is pretty simple. I'm trying to make this simple.
Mm-hmm.
And please ask if I...
Oh, of course I will.
Okay. In trying to understand this multidimensional personality, I use the analogy of an iceberg to describe this. And if you think of the tip of the iceberg, the tip of the iceberg represents you, Kate, or me, Paul, that part of us that psychologists call the ego, our sense of identity, our taste, our intent, our skills that we bring to us. The surface level that separates the tip of this iceberg and the submerged part of the iceberg, we call the subconscious. And this analogy represents the subconscious layer. And that's that part of ourselves that helps us digest our food, grows our hair, tells us when it's time to go to sleep, and is a mediating layer or a translation layer. And then this third part is this deep submerged part that we will just call the soul or spirit, shall we say. And this, it turns out, is our gateway to the infinite. Actually, the gateway to God, if you want to call it that. But this iceberg represents us as the tip, as a single identity, but also shows that there's a direct connection within our subconscious to the divine.
That's a great analogy, actually. You know, that really is. You know, sort of get a handle on that very, very well. Now, okay, so... Well, you didn't answer my question. Who is Seth? Do we know who it is?
See, the question's interesting because who, and we're talking about identity.
Yes.
So this tip of the iceberg layer. We are in human form, obviously. We give ourselves names. We live lives. We have gender, and so forth. At this submerged part of the iceberg, it is really. I conceive of it as a source self. And actually, this was Jane Roberts' term in her aspect psychology. And this is what her definition of what Seth was, a source self. And the source self, the submerged part, actually manifests more than one lifetime. That we are more than a single self. So there's more than just Kate connected to your submerged part. And to try to answer your question, Seth then is this source self that, in one sense, is made up of many personalities. It's a very radical, avant-garde model of the psyche, and it's something that is only now being investigated in what's called transpersonal psychology here in the States and in other places.
So this source self is a kind of collective source self. It wasn't just Jane's source self.
That's right.
Yeah.
Now, of course, Jane goes into an altered state. The Seth energy comes through her subconscious, so it's being translated. It starts to take on characteristics of Jane's personality because it's using her vocabulary, her brain, her physical nervous system to translate itself into our physical world of space and time. So again, the submerged part of the iceberg does not exist in space or time.
You see,
I
was just saying, you know, we have investigated or looked at or talked with so many sort of different kinds of, well, faiths, ways of thinking, ways of leading one's life, and I have a bit of a problem with, and I'm assuming I'll nail my colours to the mast immediately. I have a bit of a problem with somebody who, you know, just like some person, rather like Joseph Smith with the Church of Latter-day Saints, who at 14 goes into a field and has visions. Jane Roberts, who suddenly becomes a channeler. I mean, they could have been as mad as March Hares. No, and I'm putting the view that a lot of people listening might think, and you know, when they think California too, you know, you tend to think flaky off the wall. I'm being terribly judgmental, but I'm putting a point of view which I think a lot of people listening might think, you know, why can't Tabo Makoka hear my controller suddenly go into a trance state and tell me he's receiving messages from whatever. You know, am I right to believe him? would I, should I believe him? Should I just think he's a nutcase? You know, so, okay, so that's a point of view I'm throwing at you.
Okay, let me try and address the six or seven things.
Yes, I know.
One way we try to educate people about this is by investigating the channeling phenomenon. You mentioned John Smith,
yes.
Is that his name?
Joseph Smith,
the Mormon Church.
Yes.
In my view, he was a channeler. He went into an altered state, and this submerged part of his self came through and offered what we can just call revelatory information.
Yes.
And Jane Roberts did the same thing. I believe that the historical Christ, the historical Muhammad, and the historical Buddha also did the same thing. Now, there's a question of how deep this information comes from.
Mm.
And when it goes through the subconscious layer, this mediating layer, back to our analogy, the surface layer, the water, air line,
mm-hmm.
how much does it get distorted? How much is it colored by the belief systems of the tip of the iceberg?
Yes.
Because that is where it gets translated.
Yes.
And in the area of channeling, we're dealing with subjective experience. It's like trying to explain a dream I had to you and to the mm-hmm. listening audience. I can use words to translate it, but it's my dream, and it's my subjective experience. It's just mm. like if your breakfast mm. this morning, if you were to attempt to describe that, you use words, you might use mathematics, you might use art or music to try and express that also. So these are just different ways that the psyche, this multidimensional collective energy that we are connected to and part of, tries to express itself and deliver helpful, useful information.
Mm.
Now, the problem is when someone succeeds in connecting with a very deep layer of the submerged part, and we're all divine. All of these layers are divine by nature. Religious belief systems start to kick into the equation, and we start to look at leaders, religious leaders and so forth. And in Joseph Smith's case, that's a good example. He became the leader of a church. In Jane Roberts' case, she had no wish to begin a church. And in fact, I described Seth, the Seth personality, as an anti-guru. He was not interested in starting a church or promoting a church or a new dogma. And part of this anti-guru idea is that he said flat out in the very beginning, I am not to be considered an infallible source. Try as best I can to translate this information, and believe me, we're going to do our best job to get it out of blood distortion. To some extent, it's distorted, it's colored by Jane's subconscious mind, which I have to go through. And so take it with a grain of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in contrast to it, Joseph Smith, certainly the word, as it gets translated in a book form, that word is then put up as an infallible source.
Mm.
The divine
mm.
source has the word.
Mm.
And this is a big difference between the Seth material and other religious beliefs.
Mm.
Now, the bridge between the two, in my view, is that they're dealing with our spiritual nature. Okay?
Yes.
And the spiritual nature in all true religions is common, is a common element. And there's this thing called the perennial philosophy. Aldous Huxley wrote about it in the 40s. And it was looking at the common elements in all the world's religions.
Mm-hmm.
And when you start to mine the gems and look at the common elements, you start to see things that emerge. And even in what Joseph Smith talked about, you find common elements. And for
mm-hmm.
example, just briefly, the idea that God, whatever a God concept you want to offer, is the primary source of all consciousness. That God is contained within all matter and energy, including you and I. That we survive death in some form. That the rational mind and the intellect can only present a limited view of the truth that is the divine. And the world is made up of our beliefs, as we think, is how we create things. So these are common elements that we find in all of these things. I know I'm going on a little bit.
No, and you're so right.
This is what's called the esoteric,
yes.
inner teaching that's found in all the world's teachings. in complementary or in counterpart to that, we have the outer teaching, the exoteric, which is like an exoskeleton that insects have. And that's where we start to get into the rules and only eat fish on Fridays and pray this way and then that way and utter this chant and this prayer. And that's fine. And Seth and myself are not saying that those are wrong, but we take it with a grain of salt. They're not absolute. And that's the difference. Many religions take their written expressions of subjective experience from this deep part of the iceberg as absolute. And that's a big difference.
And literally make it gospel.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And now that you mention the gospel, I mean, in the Bible, which is a wonderful source of information, the four gospels were written 4 or 5 decades after the passing of the historical Christ. That would be something like me trying to write about the JFK assassination today, and just sitting down finally and writing about, you know, my experience if I were there. And you can imagine that I probably changed some things. And this is not to say that they're wrong, that the Gospels are wrong, but they're colored. And so in that view, they're not absolute. So we're looking for truth, and we're looking for meaning, right, in all of these sources. And in the Sethian view of things, he says it's the individual who can only find this truth themselves, and that having a minister or an expert interpreter or facilitator is fine, but can only get you so far. You are the one. You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make them drink. You have to do this yourself. Search for truth. You have to search for meaning. And ultimately, we all do this.
I'm talking with Dr. Paul Helfrick. We're talking about the Seth material. And the lines, as always, are open, 883-0702 if you're listening in 702 land. And if you're listening on Cape Talk, 4809-567. If you'd like to talk to Paul or give your views or whatever, we'd love to hear from you. Now, okay, we've established this is channeled information. We've established that it comes from soul spirit, the deep, deep, deep soul source. Part of us or part of the universe. What are the ideas, Paul? What are some of the major ideas? You've already talked about one, that the individual, it's up to the individual to find their own path or their own truth.
And just to comment on that a little bit further, in that sense, it's a decentralized philosophy. It resists centralization, it resists creating an organization where it's promoted. And even though I have created a company called New World View that is based upon these ideas, it's again, it's not set up as a church. We're to say that the Seth material is the absolute expression of this. We want to build bridges and encourage dialogue and whatnot. Now, some other ideas. Another central idea here is the idea that we call conscious creation. And that, in simple terms, means that we each create our own lives, our own reality, our own perception. And the means by which we do that is through our belief systems, which are a psychological filter that colors everything in our perception. And for example, our belief in good or evil, our belief in delicious or sour or sweet, colors everything that we do. And some of the implications of this idea are profound. As we start to get into the human condition and we look at joy, happiness, loving, fulfilling relationships, abundance versus pain and suffering, disease, war, pestilence, earthquakes, floods, and we get to some very deep ideas about the human condition and how this works. And this is a challenging idea. And it's an idea that is a little scary if you haven't heard of it before, because we have been trained, and I'll just speak about American culture, because that's what I think of it. So we are trained to be victims from day one, that things happen to us. Illness is outside of us, they're germs, they're viruses, and it's an unsafe, dangerous universe, and we have to protect ourselves. We need our inoculations, we need this and that. And these are beliefs. Everything that I've been saying this evening reflects my own beliefs. And so those are the filters of how I create my reality. I think idea that the human personality is multidimensional is a third key idea. And the fourth one, then, is that the universe, which if you break that down into una and verse, una means one, is not really a universe at all. It's more aptly called an omniverse, which hints at a multidimensional universe. Mm-hmm. It's hard to explain this in words, mm-hmm. but quantum mechanics, and maybe we can talk, we'll have time mm-hmm. to talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
Quantum mechanics is an area of science and speculation, theoretical speculation, that offers a bridge and a lot of bridging concepts to get into this Sethian worldview. So there's some more of the core ideas. In terms of personal status, personal wealth, personal skill, your relationships, your health, this idea that you create all of that is terrifying at first. We're so used to having others help us with that when we're sick. I go to my doctor still, but I realize that these are beliefs now that the medical, the drugs that I take when they're prescribed by my doctor, cure me, and so they do. It can get a bit circular if we're just mm-hmm. looking at it from a logical point of view.
But let's just talk about this a wee bit more. You know, conscious creation. Okay, you're saying it's a concept. It's an idea that emphasizes our own ability to form our own reality through thoughts, feelings, beliefs, whatever. But there is a reality that we have to deal with. I'm going to give you an example here. I was talking while I've been traveling the last couple of weeks. I had one very interesting conversation with a teacher in a private school in Johannesburg. And he was saying, we were talking about the pressures that are put on kids now. We're not just talking about pressures like drugs and that stuff. I'm talking about pressures within the system. In South Africa, we still have a very academic system. We have examinations. You go to university. If you get good marks, you only rise another step on the educational ladder if you've got X marks. And there are expectations of you not only in the academic field, but the sporting field. You've got to be good at something. And children are brainwashed into thinking that they've got to be successful from a very, very early age. Okay, so that is a reality that is being forced on them, but it is also a reality, if you see what I mean. You've got to, how do parents work within that system? You can't opt out of it. So although you're saying in the Seth material that we can create our own reality, indeed we can in some ways, but we can't divorce ourselves entirely from the social or the educational or the emotional reality that we're in.
No, and the idea is to more fully embrace that with a greater self-awareness, a greater sense of self, a greater sense of who you are, what you do well. See, I've been an educator my whole life. I don't like to put labels on myself, mm-hmm. but that's one hat I can wear this evening.
Well, I'll join you there, because I also wear that hat.
It's something that has come very natural to me,
yeah.
that I enjoy tremendously interacting with children or adults. But the educational system, suddenly when we're looking at beliefs, we're looking at mass beliefs, we're looking at a consensus reality. I'll just speak again from the American point of view. We look, what are our two highest values? Wealth and beauty. We are bombarded incessantly with messages about our self-esteem and our self-worth is based upon our beauty and our wealth.
Absolutely.
And so these are mass views. And, you know, we have bulimia and anorexia. We have symptoms of people struggling to meet up to impossible expectations. We have an education system that is adequate in the States. However, it's broken. And it's interesting, and that's a whole other show, really, talking about the implications of conscious creation in the education system. But these are mass beliefs, and we have a choice to align with them. We're not aligned. And when you don't align with the consensus or the mass view, you're a rebel. And when you do, you become a very successful person, or you know, somewhere in between those two ends of the spectrum. So it's a choice. All of us have a choice of what beliefs we choose to align with. And how many of us in our own personal experiences have gone through our school days and can remember back to being a child and, you know, being forced, so to speak, to take piano lessons or dance or go out for the football team or something like that, and either on one side really loving it and excelling or hating it, being terrified. And when you're in that part of it, you're realizing that that is not what you're here to excel in. It's an experience you can try. And so the universe gives us feedback in that sense. And we're the ones that digest that feedback and then make choice. We have free will. And the Sethian view very much supports that idea, that this tip of the multidimensional iceberg is gifted intentionally with free will to make choice. We have a choice as to what beliefs we align to. And that is a loaded statement.
Very much. Okay, let's go to the lines. I'm talking to Dr. Paul Helfrich about the Seth material, a way of leading your life, a way of leading your life. Let's go to Clyde. Hi, Clyde.
Really good evening. Good evening, Dr. Paul. The two things I want to ask you about interconnectedness and truth. The first is, you know, this lady you were talking about that has contact with the Seth. Do you think that, you know, everything she talks about is basically just a regurgitation of all her own experiences, or does she have an interconnectedness with, let's call it a universal consciousness, which could be God himself, or an interconnectedness between all mankind right throughout time? That's my first question.
I think that, remember I mentioned earlier the subconscious part of our iceberg analogy, that's a mediating or translating layer. Jane struggled with the phenomenon. She didn't know what it was. She tried to understand it. She went to scientific psychology. She went to religion. And both had views on these things. So she was afraid that it was all just a hallucination, that she was schizophrenic, she was ill, and this was just some part of her subconscious, you know, that had the messiah complex, so to speak, and or rock star complex or whatever that manifests to become a public icon like that. So she struggled with this, but she wrestled with it, and in my view, she conquered it, and it's there in her writings. These three aspect psychology books cover that. The second part of your question is where I believe the deeper part of the submerged iceberg is where the Seth source is. It is the collective unconscious. It is a deeper source element that is the basis of not only human personality, but actually all consciousness on the planet. It's a holistic view where things are connected, like a cell, a stomach, a body, a mind. They're all different layers and different parts of it. They're all working together in a web. So it's a bigger climb.
And your second question, Clyde?
I just want to say one comment on what you just said now.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're actually saying is there is an interconnectedness between even animals and so forth. That is why I say, like, herds can do a certain thing all at the same time, or a flock of birds would all move as one.
Absolutely. They also have a submerged part of the iceberg that is part of their personality. And that submerged part is not in space or time. It's, in physics terms, it's called a non-local state, non-locality, which means it's instantaneous communication. That's how that flock of birds instantly turns, or a school of fish when a predator is around.
Yeah.
It's an amazing phenomenon.
I see. Okay. The second one, truth. We're talking about truth. Do we not usually, this is my experience, that, you know, we often say we seek truth, but isn't it really that we only seek, say, a certain theology or so, to try to bend this theology to our way of thinking? Because, you know, when I have already really tried to seek truth, I often find out that just about everything I do, I seem to be doing for a different reason to what I really first of all thought.
Mm-hmm. That's a big one.
Yeah.
Truth and the nature of truth.
Yeah.
It's a single word, truth. It means a lot of different things in a lot of different contexts, or different types of truth. And just very simply, in scientific terms, there's propositional truth. The boiling point of water is 100 degrees Celsius. That's a propositional truth. You can check it on your part of the planet, and I can. However, when we're talking about spiritual sources and spiritual truth, ultimate reality, this primary source, that's a different thing. It is filtered through our subconscious and our the tip of the iceberg, which has belief systems. So we are going to create our own translation of truth, our own version of truth, based solely upon the beliefs that we hold about that. So what this means, what this implies, is that the more we know ourselves, the greater self-awareness that we have, the greater identification that we have with how we create our reality through these beliefs, the closer to this spiritual truth we can come. And of course, only you can experience your version of that divine truth through your own, as can we all.
Okay, thanks, Ty. Truth has many faces, but I know listeners have often called in and said, oh, there is absolute truth. And I've always found it very difficult to be as certain as some people are that there is an absolute truth, you know, given we're not talking about propositional truth like you've been talking about.
Right.
Go on.
I just wanted to comment that this absolute truth, this is part of the perennial philosophy, and where philosophers and even scientists, theologians have wrestled and continue to wrestle with that. And my view, just to offer that, is that there is an absolute truth, but it is not static. It's dynamic. It's this source energy, is how I think of the divine, that endlessly fuels endless creativity, endless expression, endless variation through consciousness. And that, you know, so there's an absolute quality to that. It's not describable by a mathematical or a philosophical dialect. You can attempt to approach it, but you're going to be dealing with belief systems when we do that. So what I'm suggesting is that there this absolute truth, that we want to get into that, and that's a big topic, is independent of our belief systems. It exists through the tip of the iceberg. It exists on the subconscious, but it also exists in this no space, no time, actual infinite area of the inner self, the soul, the spirit.
Okay, let's go to Eddie. Hi, Eddie. How are you doing?
Hi, welcome back home.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back home. People often ask me what's my favorite place, and I say home.
That's it. And he's with home base. Kate, welcome to your guest. Kate, I'd like to stay 1 minute. I want to say this, and then I want his comment. Man is the measure of all things. That's the latest we are going to. And I say, what is man that thou art mindful of him? That's what God says. I say, one makes the story is a minor mirror of two contending worldviews. One makes humanity the creator, subject to truth. The other places God in that role. No middle ground exists between these two positions. To this case, no possibility of compromise. There's potential for synthesis. There's either one or the other. I want to quote this British astrophysicist Stephen Hawking once said that humankind was nothing but a chemical scum on a moderate-sized planet orbiting around a very average star in the outer suburb of one among 100 billion galaxies. I'm sorry, he couldn't be more wrong. Christ didn't die for a chemical scum, and I'm worried about this. We are going to a place where the tail is wagging the dog, and I'm worried, where the creature determines the creator's thoughts, and I'm worried about this. I don't know what he thinks.
Okay, do you want to listen on air, Eddie? Okay, thanks for calling. Okay, Paul, these two polarized views, either, and I'm paraphrasing Eddie there, he's worried because either God is in charge and loves us and dies for us, or we're in charge and it doesn't matter.
And here's my view. again, through my belief systems. Eddie expressed a scientific belief system characterized by Stephen Hawking's view that basically the universe is a result of a meaningless chance explosion that we call the Big Bang, and that life evolved on the planet quite accidentally, perhaps the result of lightning striking a pool of amino acids. That's on one side of our scientific spectrum. On the other side, the religious spectrum says that the earth was created in 7 days. This is the Christian mythos. The Hindu, the Buddhist, the Taoist, they tell different creation myths. But both of them, all of them, the common element is that there was a creation and there's a divine consciousness that pre-exists, so to speak. In between that is a whole lot of speculation. And some of what Eddie talked about, I guess we would characterize as Christian beliefs about Christ and so forth, dying for our sins, and that's part of the exoteric or dogmatic translation, and I'll just respectfully allow Eddie to pursue his beliefs there, because they serve him well, and they're different than mine.
Which are?
The historical Christ was a great teacher, but no more divinely inspired than you or I.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Michael, your comments.
Okay, a slightly different set of questions.
Yes?
I've read most of Jane Roberts' work. I'd like to ask Paul about Framework 1, Framework 2, the inner souls, and the portion of our souls that selects the probabilities in Framework 2 that is then inserted into Framework 1. Comment on that.
Oh, well, I said, will you listen on air, Michael?
Yes, I'll do that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Well, I think, first of all, we need to know what Framework 1 and Framework 2 and what Michael is actually talking about.
I'll explain that. That's getting into what I call Seth jargon a little bit. Seth's idea, and we can come back to our iceberg. Seth's idea is that this tip of the iceberg, where the air is and the tip lives, he calls that Framework 1.
Okay.
The submerged portion of the iceberg, which is infinitely more vast, is Framework 2. This is not a new idea. This is just a Seth's version of this perennial idea.
Mm-hmm.
There's a physicist named David Bohm who uses the term implicate order and explicate order. That means the same thing. Essentially, that there's a physical domain and that there is a non-physical, no space, no time domain that is a source domain that fuels and is coupled strongly. And that's this relationship in Seth's terms of Framework 2 and Framework 1. Actually, it goes back to Plato's cave.
Yes.
Plato was aware of the same thing, of a source reality that we cannot see through only our physical senses. So what our caller was suggesting is that in this non-physical domain, since there's no space or time, events exist in a probable state. They have not manifest yet. And this is where we can perhaps touch briefly on some quantum mechanics, which says, until I observe the electron, I just am observing a field, an electromagnetic field. When I take the observation, I can identify, I can collapse the wave function, so to speak, and identify a precise location. In fact, creating a version of the electron in that moment. But until I do, until I take the measurement, until the eye and the optical nerve fires to the brain of the scientist who's taking the measurement, it exists in an infinite probable state. And that is the foundation of probabilities, probable realities. That takes us into a larger area.
Mm-hmm.
What it says, it ties into this idea that we create our lives. Things are not predestined. There is no fate. Even when we get into prophecy and prediction, people have precognitive dreams, they have precognitive visions that sometimes play out precisely. So that shows some evidence that there is a non-local area that Seth calls Framework 2, that it is possible to consciously, from the tip of the iceberg's perspective, tap into and accurately translate, not just overly distort. Sometimes we have precognitive dreams or visions or knowings, intuition, and if it just doesn't quite work out the same way. In fact, more often, in my case, anyway, more often than not, it gets distorted.
Okay, stay with us, Paul. We're going to take a short break. Stay tuned. We're talking about the Seth material, a way of looking at ourselves, a way of looking at the world. We'll be back in just a moment.
The 702 FMB Walker Talk would like to welcome the following teams of walkers: Amalgam Pharmaceuticals, BHH Santon Schul, Didata, Emmerines, and the CCMA team to the 702 FMB Walk the Talk on Sunday the 22nd of July at the Wanderer Stadium.
Welcome back. I'm Kate Turkington. The program is Believe It or Not, a program about the way we choose to live our lives. On the line from Los Angeles, Dr. Paul Helfrich, and we're talking about the Seth material. Marcia, you've got a point to make.
Yes, and I was listening to all the, you know, the people phoning in with their comments and the replies your
Dr. Paul,
the visitor was giving. Yes, and very very interesting. You know, it's lovely to hear all these intellectual and philosophical questions and answers. But what I have found very important in my life is that you know, the Bible is unique. It's filled with, it's a book of prophecy, and unlike any other book in the world, what makes it so very, very special and unique is the fact that all those prophecies have been fulfilled, and you can look at history, and you can question them, and you can actually go up and look for the accuracy of all those prophecies. And the interesting thing is that there's still more that are going to be fulfilled. And, you know, that's the simplicity and the purity of that language of the Bible. That's what I find so fascinating about it.
Oh, well,
interesting program.
Thanks, Marcy. And I think, you know, what Paul would say there, if I dare put words into his mouth, is that is your belief system, that is what gives you comfort, what gives you joy, which gives you full fulfillment, and that's great. That's great.
Exactly. That's its practical application. If these ideas have no practical use, then they're no good, and they fade away and they go away. And that is, there's a historical process that we can see if we study that over the millennia. The Bible's a wonderful source. The Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, on and on. The scriptures, the Tantra and Sutra in the Hindu and Buddhist traditions are wonderful sources of information. All are a translation of divine information, in my view.
Just one last question for you. What's particularly new about the Seth material? Because aren't we hearing really what's been around since people have been around?
Yes, in one sense, you've hit it right on the head, Kate. There's absolutely nothing new. In one sense, that's a loaded statement, of course. Mm. In another sense, we can debate, and we do this on the email list that I moderate, the SethNet email list. We debate all of this as, you know, how new is this? And if it's a new translation, what's different in this translation from older translations that may perhaps be more distorted? At least that's how I think of it. And so I touched on this earlier, and again, it is a philosophical point, but the Seth view is a very anti-guru.
Yeah.
I hesitate strongly to say anti-authority, because it's not about anarchy and revolution and taking over things and subverting the establishment. It's not that at all.
Will you give us a website address, Paul?
Sure. NewWorldview.com.
Okay.
And New Worldview are the three words all together with no space.
Okay. Oh, well, thanks so much for being on the program. And let's do come back and we'll talk about some of the other issues that have been raised, particularly the education one, I think. Okay, thanks so much. We'll be back after the 7 o'clock news. Welcome back to Believe It or Not. I'm Kate Turkington, and we were talking there with Dr. Helfrich about the Sethian material. And that website address again, where have I got it? www.newworldview, that's all one word, newworldview.com. Most interesting discussion. I hope you found that too. Now hear this.